The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight, we dive into the heart of the Alaska Triangle with Mike Ricksecker, author of Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. Mike will take us on a journey through one of the most enigmatic regions on Earth, where more than 16,000 people have disappeared without a trace since 1988. Our conversation goes beyond just the mysteries of this remote wilderness. We're talking time travel, other dimensions, and the elusive shadow people that reside in the corners of our reality. Mike will share insights from his research and personal experiences in the Alaska Triangle, drawing parallels to the Bermuda Triangle and exploring the possibility of ancient structures hidden in its depths. We'll tackle the phenomena of vortexes, dimensional portals, and the electromagnetic quirks that make this area a hotspot for the unexplained. But it's not all about the land and its anomalies. We're stepping into the concept of time travel and the odd incidents that hint at our proximity to understanding the fourth dimension. Mike's encounters with shadow people offer a unique look at these mysterious figures, challenging our perceptions of the universe. As we gear up for tonight's talk, keep in mind the stories of those who face the inexplicable and the scientific theories that edge us closer to making sense of the mysteries. We're not just chasing after answers. We're embracing the questions that push the limits of our understanding. Join us tonight for a deep dive into the Alaska Triangle, the fascinating theories of time travel, and the enigmatic presence of shadow people. This isn't just another paranormal discussion. It's a quest for knowledge in our mysterious universe. Mike Ricksecker is coming up next.
Welcome to Veritas. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasradio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. If you're looking to get in touch with Mel, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's program. And now, here's your host, Mel Hastelrick.
Now, when I think of missing airplanes, ships, people, UFOs, and paranormal activity, the infamous Bermuda Triangle immediately comes to mind. I grew up in two of those corners, but have you ever heard of the Alaska Triangle? I remember back in 1972, when I was a child, so many news stories were emerging that year. It wasn't until recently that I discovered tonight's special guest who will enlighten us further on this topic. The title of his book is Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. We'll also discuss some of his other books about time travel and shadow people. You can find him at MikeRicksecker.com. And from, I believe, Cleveland, Ohio, I'd like to welcome Mike Ricksecker. Hello, Mike, and welcome to Veritas.
Thank you so much, Mel. I really appreciate being on tonight.
My pleasure. And did I call your location correctly?
Yeah, I'm in the Cleveland, Ohio area, west side.
Excellent. Well, Mike, before we delve into your background and story, which is fascinating, I want to touch on something. I believe it was 1972, also the year when Alaska became recognized for having its own mysterious triangle. And I recall I was mentioning to you offline, Nick Begich. I know Nick, and many years ago, he told me about his dad disappearing. And was that year that we can colloquially say Alaska became a triangle? It became a thing?
I think it was about that time that it became more well-known, 1972. I mean, there were already a lot of disappearances that occurred up there, other planes that had gone missing. But that particular one with Nick Begich Sr. and Hale Boggs, who was the House Majority Leader at the time, that was really, really high profile and became the biggest search and rescue mission in U.S. history to that date. They were utilizing spy planes, all kinds of personnel were mobilized. So that could really be the time that we could say, yes, it became recognized as a triangle type area, although that type of activity had already been happening before that.
So how did you become involved with the Triangle? Tell me more about you, because I know you were stationed there in Alaska with the Air Force, right?
Yeah, for 3 years, 1992, 1995. So way back in the day, at least for me, way back in the day. And, you know, when I was there, I was just a young airman, had no idea about the strange occurrences that happened up there. Yet I did experience some strange things. A lot of others did as well. Of course, you know, people kind of whispered under their breaths about UFO activity and that sort of thing. But it really wasn't then, even though I had an interest in the phenomena and the subject, it wasn't really back then where I dove deep into that type of research in Alaska specifically. I was tapped some years back now for the Alaska Triangle television show. And it was, it's kind of a funny story because the production company had reached out to me. They came across one of my videos on my YouTube channel that dealt with portals and supernatural activity. And ironically enough, it was not a very well-viewed video. It was a very low view count on that particular video. But yet they came across it, they found it, and they reached out to me. So we got on a Zoom call, or might have been Skype back then. And you know, we're talking about that type of phenomena and so forth. And all of a sudden they had asked me, well, you know, what do you know about that type of activity happening in Alaska? And I told them, well, I'd been stationed up there and people, you know, talked about what's known as the Alaska Triangle. And they kind of laughed and said, you know, that's the name of our television show. So I signed right up. They flew me up there. We did some interviews on the side of Flat Top Mountain and so forth. And it really inspired me being back up there and talking about this type of phenomenon. You know, and I'd already written several books on paranormal supernatural activity at that time. And I was just inspired to go ahead and write a book about the Alaska Triangle.
So when we think of a triangle, we think of the Bermuda Triangle. As I mentioned, I grew up in Puerto Rico, in Miami, two of the corners. And I remember back in 1972, so many stories, cattle mutilation, UFOs, different things. It just happened that year. Why do you think that year, 1972, and then we talk about the disappearance of Nick Begich Sr., what do you think happened that year worldwide? Because it seems to be prevalent all over the world.
You know, that era, really, I mean, you could point at 1972, but it's really that era. There was so much going on in the world. You had Vietnam going on. You had the oil embargo. There was just, you know, vibrationally, it was not a very good era. And so I think that kind of really amped up the energies around the globe that, you know, places like the Bermuda Triangle, the Alaska Triangle, there are other air triangle areas around the world. I think it kind of really helped to amp up the activity in these areas.
What about the, not only the notion that there's an underground crystal pyramid in the Bermuda Triangle? I don't want to bring you to the Bermuda Triangle and stay in Alaska, but I've heard that there's a pyramid also underground in Alaska. Is that fiction or is that true?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because all we really have for it is anecdotal stories. And we can talk about other triangle areas as well. I have no problem with that because my next book is actually going to be talking about a number of those other triangle areas. And I even talk about some of them in the Alaska book. But yeah, there are stories of the Dark Pyramid or the Black Pyramid that's under Mount Denali, formerly Mount McKinley. And it really came about during the early 1990s where China was doing atomic testing, nuclear testing. And one of those shock waves, as it permeated across the globe, the seismographs there in Alaska showed what appeared to be a pyramidal structure there under Mount Denali. So this was a story that was broadcast around the area. Doug Munchler was the one involved, stationed up there in the Army at the time. And what's interesting about this story is that because he found it fascinating, you know, he started contacting other people he knew in the area. Hey, you know, I saw this new story run. You know, look for the follow-up. You know, other stations would probably be carrying it, that sort of thing. And nobody did. There was no follow-up report, no additional broadcast of it. So we went down to the station and asked about the broadcast, and they denied that it ever occurred. Well, as he was walking out, a junior staff member, you know, grabbed him by the arm and said, you know, just before you came, there were a couple of guys in suits that came by, grabbed the tapes, and we're supposed to deny this ever aired. Yeah, so we're talking Men in Black type of story here. So in other people have come forward over the years. Linda Moultonhow has done a lot of research in this area, and her Earth Files is where you can find a lot of this information. And people have reported to her, yeah, you know, I had a dad that was stationed there in that area and so forth. And so there are a number of stories that have come out of that area about this Black Pyramid. It's very dark in nature. Formerly been a power plant that could expand out into, you know, could power even parts of Canada, this sort of thing. But again, we don't have the physical evidence. What we did for the television show with the Alaska Triangle is we sent a crew in a plane over that area, and we did discover what appeared to be human activity. So an area that looked like a landing strip and a road that had gone into that area, some old buildings, that sort of thing. Nothing currently in use, however, at least it didn't appear so to those that went up there.
Why is it that when we think of pyramids, I think of Chris Dunn and the Giza power plant. Do you lend credence to the fact that pyramids could have been power plants years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been to Egypt a number of times now. I've been inside the Great Pyramid of Giza, and if not a power plant, at least some sort of machine. The evidence is right there in plain sight. You go into the Queen's Chamber. There's a niche on the within the left wall as you walk into there, and within that niche, now it looks like it's a corbelled structure. It looks like a miniature grand gallery that's just, you know, parked into this wall. And traditional archaeology tells us, well, you know, this was a niche that they, you know, had some sort of idol or statue standing in there. But when you go and you look at it, it's like, no. For one, there's this small tunnel that leads straight back off. It goes back about 30 meters. And I don't know what it was for exactly. But as you look at that back wall of the niche just above that tunnel, the rock there, the stone there, is charred. It's scorched. You know, it's been, something was burning there, and it burned so hot that it actually melted the stone. You can see little rivulets of melted stone that's right there. And also the Queen's Chamber has a coating of salt. So there was some sort of chemical reaction that was going on within this chamber. Something was extremely hot occurring there that was able to scorch the walls and actually melt the stone. So if not a power plant, certainly some sort of machine.
I leverage your expertise and your experience in that part of the world. Never been. That's one of in my bucket list. But I've heard of so many researchers who have been there who told me that there are certain areas that are dark to get in and you need, you know, flashlights or artificial lighting. But the one thing is, if you look at the walls, there's no soot. There's nothing showing that they had fire or torches in that area back in the day. How did they light their way around it, even to build it?
Yeah, that's one of the mysteries of that particular area. And if you haven't been, I encourage you to come along on our Stargates of Ancient Egypt tour that we're putting on in April. It's a yearly tour now.
Great to know.
Yeah, you know, there's so many mysteries surrounding how they built these structures. And, you know, when you walk into these, like when I did for the first time, you know, it's so awe-striking. You know, you see photos, you watch videos, you see documentaries, these sorts of things. And you're like, oh, these are fantastic buildings. But when you actually walk in and you see how big and how massive they are, and our traditional archaeology is trying to tell us, well, you know, they used, you know, stone and copper tools to make these. No, absolutely not. You're talking, you know, in many cases, massive granite blocks that are hundreds, if not thousands of tons. And the symmetry and the precision carving that are on these blocks, you can't do with stone and copper tools. So, that's one of the biggest mysteries is how did they do this with the technology that we're told that they have? You know, when you actually look at it, you know it was some other technology that was used to build these things.
Why do we ascribe that work to aliens, ancient aliens? And I've talked to the members of the Dogon tribe, and they get upset. They said, no, it was humans before. We had the capabilities. Something happened. They had to escape to Mali and other parts of Africa, as you know. They were the priests of the time, and they learned everything through oral tradition. What happened to the knowledge that we cannot replicate any of these megalithic structures around the world anymore?
Well, yeah, that's what happens when civilizations get lost, lost civilizations. I don't necessarily believe it was aliens that built these structures either. Now, could there have been some involvement with extraterrestrials that passed on knowledge to humans that they were able to use that knowledge and build these things? That's possible. If you look at, figures throughout our cultures across the world, when you talk like Inki or Quetzalcoatl, these sorts of figures, they came to these areas after the great cataclysm and passed knowledge down to those people so they could rebuild. So was knowledge passed on? Yes, but I do believe it was humans that had built these things. Now, knowledge gets lost and the know-how gets lost when you have great cataclysms like that, when you have wars. And back then, when people warred, it was genocide. You're wiping out entire civilizations. You would have great famines and things like this where, when you go into survival mode, you are no longer concerned about building great structures. And depending on how long you're in that survival mode, it might go generations and that knowledge will get lost. You're passing on at that point knowledge on how to grow some crops, how to hunt, how to survive, make some clothing, build smaller structures that you can live in for the time being. And so that know-how from those engineers would naturally get lost. And if it's something like a great cataclysm, like a flood, other types of catastrophes, if it's your engineers that die in those cases, or just take today. If we had some sort of great cataclysm, those people that are, I come out of the IT industry. Most people that are involved in IT are not going to know how to go hunt or plant crops or that, know how to survive. Corporate bankers probably are not going to either. These type of people would not be the ones that survive. And so, it's that know-how would naturally die out, and then civilization would have to restart and may go a different direction. So while older civilizations had these fantastic building skills, that was lost. And when civilization resprouted, we went in a bit of a different direction.
I think if there's another cataclysm or another reset, and it's a matter of time, and this happens throughout history for millennia, I think they're going to call us the Pleistocene era just because of many plastics, right? But ice core samples the cores of trees, can we determine in specific intervals in time when the next one will happen?
That's a good question. Yeah. You look at ice core samples and you see those different eras, those different epochs, and it really is only a matter of time before something else happens. And the question is, what caused the Great Flood? Well, there's debate on there. Was it a solar flare? Was it a comet impact? Could have been either, but we know something happened. And so something will happen to us again. I don't know if it's really predictable. When's going to be a great solar flare? Well, we know every 11 years there's a mass coronal ejection. Now, how big that's going to be, we can't quite predict that. Things that could map that could wipe out entire power grids, or if we have something like the polar flip, the magnetic poles flip. Now, the last time that happened was about 40,000 years ago, and the duration was about 400 years. Well, we see 40,000 years ago is a lot of cave art, Spain, France, other parts of the world. So people were having to hide in caves because during that time, the magnetic shield of the Earth got down to about 10 to 20%. So if you would go outside during the day, you'd get fried. So it wasn't.
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasradio.com. Because you don't want to believe, you want to know. Subscribe now. To listen to the rest and all of our exclusive material, proceed to the Veritas Plus member section or join the Veritas Plus family by subscribing. Click on the subscribe button at veritasradio.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for focused life force energy. Get a 15-day free trial today with no credit card required. And if you want to get in touch with Mel, want to be a guest on this radio program, have a guest suggestion, or have feedback, just click on the contact button on our website at veritasradio.com. Now, proceed to the Veritas Plus member section or subscribe to listen to the rest of the interview. You don't want to miss it. Because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at VeritasRadio.com.